The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayabhataka Swami on April 24, 1992 in Muscat. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 24, Verse 33.
I surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, descended in the form of Kapila, who is independently powerful and transcendental, who is the Supreme Person and the Lord of the sum total of matter and the element of time, who is fully cognizant, maintainer of all the universes under the three modes of material nature, and who absorbs the material manifestations after their dissolution. Translation with repetition. I surrender unto the Supreme.
I surrender unto the Supreme.
Personality of Godhead.
Personality of Godhead.
Descended in the form of Kapila.
Descended in the form of Kapila.
Who is independently powerful.
Who is independently powerful.
And transcendental.
And transcendental.
Who is the Supreme Person.
Who is the Supreme Person.
And the Lord.
And the Lord.
Of the sum total of matter.
Of the sum total of matter.
And the element of time.
And the element of time.
Who is the fully cognizant maintainer.
Who is the fully cognizant maintainer.
Of all the universes.
Of all the universes.
Under the three modes of material nature.
Under the three modes of material nature.
And who absorbs the material manifestation.
And who absorbs the material manifestation.
After their dissolution.
After their dissolution.
Report. The six opulences, wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, are indicated here by Kardama Muni, who addresses Kapila Muni, his son, as Param. The word Param is used in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the phrase Param Satyam, to refer to the Samam Bonam, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Param is explained further by the next word, Pradhanam, which means the chief, the origin, the source of everything. Sarva Karanam, the cause of all causes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not formless. He is Purusham, or the enjoyer, the original person. He is the time element and is all cognizant. He knows everything, past, present, and future. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, quote, I know everything, present, past, and future, in every corner of the universe, unquote. The material world, which is moving under the spell of the three modes of material nature, is also a manifestation of His energy. Everything that we see is an interaction of His energies. Sweta Swatara Upanishad, Chapter 6, Verse 8. Rasya Brahmana Saktis Tate Dhammakilam Jagat. This is the version of the Vishnu Purana. We can understand that whatever we see is an interaction of the three modes of material nature. But actually it is all an interaction of the Lord's energy. Lokapalam. He is actually the maintainer of all living entities. Nityo Nityanam. He is the the chief of all living entities. He is one, but he maintains many, many living entities. God maintains all of the living entities, but no one can maintain God. That is his swachanda shakti. He is not dependent on others. Someone may call himself independent, but he is still dependent on someone higher. The personality of God, however, is absolute. There is no one higher than or equal to him. Kapila Muni appeared as the son of Kardama Muni, but because Kapila is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kardama Muni offered respectful obeisances unto him with full surrender. Another word in this verse is very important. Atmanu bhutya nugatta prapancham. The Lord descends either as Kapila, or Rama, Nrisimha, or Varaha, and whatever forms he assumes in the material world are all manifestations of his own personal internal energy. They are never forms of the material nature or energy. The ordinary living entities who are manifested in this material world have bodies created by the material energy. But when Krishna or any one of his expansions or parts of the expansion descends on this material world, although he appears to have a material body, his body is not material. He always has a transcendental body. But fools and rascals who are called mudhas consider him one of them, and therefore they deride him. They refuse to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they cannot understand him. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Avajaranti maam mudha. Those who are rascals and fools deride me. When God descends in a form, this does not mean that he assumes his form with the help of the material energy. He manifests his spiritual form as he exists in his spiritual kingdom. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to text 33, chapter 24, canto 3 of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of the renunciation of Kardama Muni. Om Tat Sat. Translation again. I surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, descended in the form of Kapila, who is independently powerful and transcendental, who is the Supreme Person and the Lord of all the sum total of matter and the element of time, who is the fully cognizant maintainer of all the universes under the three modes of material nature, and who absorbs the material manifestations after their dissolution. So here, it seems that the father is offering obeisances to his son. Kardama Muni knows who his son is. Kardama Muni was practicing brahmacharya and doing meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, chanting mantras. And Vishnu revealed himself to Kardama Muni. And Kardama Muni expressed that before I'll be able to renounce the world, I need to experience the world. There is still some desire in my heart, but I want to realize you, I want to go back to you. So I'm very afraid that if I don't act properly in the material world, I'll get entangled. Therefore I need a proper wife who will help me in my journey through life to experience what is the material world, and also to help me prosecute or pursue my spiritual aspirations. So he was very straightforward and sincere to the Lord, and the Lord blessed him and instructed him that you will get a proper wife in Devahuti. Kardama Muni was a very exalted brahmana. Devahuti was the daughter of Manu. So she was technically born in a Kshatriya family. But that wasn't the bar. She was highly qualified, although there was not the same caste by birth because of their proper spiritual qualifications, material qualifications. It was recommended even by Lord Vishnu as a proper match. So Karma Muni later was approached by Swayambhu Manu, who requested him to accept his daughter in marriage. So he accepted that, and he had made some pact with his wife that I'll stay with you until I give you a son. We'll stay together for so many years, but in the end of my life, and the end after I can give you my son, then I want to renounce. So Kardama Muni was very unique. He was a yogi. So in the Vedic culture, this is a system. One goes to Brahmacharya, then Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Kardama Muni was a very powerful yogi, devotee. He was very concerned that I'll be entangled in the Grihastha life. So Vishnu said that, I will come as your son. I'll be your son. And this way he'll be blessed by having the Lord as his son. For the Lord wanted to appear in the world to give the message of God consciousness. So he inspired his devotee like this to enter into the Grihastha ashram and have a child. So by following this process of bhakti yoga, whether one is a brahmachari or a grihastha or vanaprastha or sannyas, everyone can achieve the perfection of life. But the goal is expressed in this verse, or the process, as I surrender. That we do so acknowledging the supremacy of the Lord, accepting Him as our proprietor, as our protector, as the supreme object of our worship. In this way, one is not entangled in the material world, even though one is living in it. So now we're at a later stage, just before the renunciation of Kardama Muni. He's already gone through his Grihastha ashram. He had daughters and got the daughters married. Now he's had Kapila Muni as his son. Now he's offering his obeisances and surrender to Kapila Muni. You know, although Kapila appeared as a son, that still he knew that the actual position. So Kardama Muni, he was in the mood of dasya. In the confidential parts of the Vedas, it's described that for the devotees, they can have relationship with the Lord in five different rasas or mellows: santa, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, and madhurya. The Sanskrit words, I'll give the translation. Santa means neutral. Neutral, when one simply appreciates the Lord. Like great rishis, and Shambhavi, they pray their glories to the Lord. Or even you find in other religions, hallelujah, hallelujah. They're just like, the Lord is great. They're just appreciating the Lord's greatness. If it just goes that far, just to appreciate the Lord, that He's great, He's wonderful, beautiful, just appreciation, recognition, appreciation. There's a neutral relationship. In the spiritual world, the cows, the trees are all living, liberated atmas. So they are in a neutral relationship. They are there, but they are not actively doing service. The next level, which is to actively do service, is called dasya, or servitude. Hanuman was a servitor of Lord Ram. Service means there's some respect, there's some awe and reverence. So the awe and reverence of neutral is there, but there's also service. Hanuman was lifting the Mantara mountain, or flying to Sri Lanka to get Sita, or fighting with Ravan. So many pastimes are there. So that service attitude is called dasya. That includes awe and respect. Then there's sakya, friendship. Just like Arjuna was a friend of Krishna. Krishna was driving his chariot in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Krishna and Arjuna, they were sometimes sitting together, talking. They were friends. When normally there was no awe and reverence, there was just a familiarity, friendship, love. So when the There's two types of friendship. One is friendship like a younger brother to an older brother, a little awe, little respect is there. Another is where there's no such formality. It's just a spontaneous friendship. Also you see Krishna and the cowherd boys like Subal, Sudam, Sridam. They would play in the forest of Vrindavan together as friends. This is another rasa, a relationship with the Lord. Then there's Vatsalya. That's parenthood, where one has a parental relationship with the Lord. Like Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, they had a parental relationship. They thought that I have to feed Krishna, otherwise he'll die if I don't feed him. Mother Yasoda would catch Krishna stealing butter like this. So what you're doing if you destroy all the butter, what will there be to eat? Because Krishna would give all the butter to the monkeys. So that where you think the Lord is dependent upon you, the Lord is lesser than you are, that's called Vatsalya, or parental. In Chaitanya's pastimes, when Krishna came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as his devotee, so the father of Lord Chaitanya didn't know that Chaitanya was Krishna. He just thought, this is my son. So I have to protect my son. I have to train him. So sometimes he would scold Lord Chaitanya. He'd behave properly, do this properly. Spare the rod and spoil the child. From the age of 1 to 5, Vedas advise, different rishis have advised that children should be really pampered and given all kind of love, whatever they want to give them. But from 6 to 16, they should be disciplined very strictly, no nonsense. They must follow the parent. And if they don't, then they can be disciplined. At the age of 16, then the children should be treated as friends and not forced, but after that convinced that you should do like this, but more intellectually, not just by force. So, as a parent, then he was thinking, I have to train Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I have to train my son Nimai Chaitanya. He was known as Nimai. So he was chastised. One night in a dream, one brahmana came and said, how you are chastising your son? You don't know your son is God? Your son is avatar? But then Jagannath Mishra was saying that whatever my son may be, he's my son. I have to train him. I have to see to his proper upbringing. But how you can chastise the Lord? And like this they're having argument. They said, then finally Jagannath Mishra woke up from his dream and he was very bewildered. What to do? Then he said, whatever my son may be, I have to take care of him. So he would completely go back again into this parental mood. He couldn't maintain another vision. So how is this that the devotees, the parents of Krishna, parents of Lord Chaitanya, they always see the Lord as the son. This is by yoga maya. This is not an ordinary illusion. It's a special spiritual illusion which is created so that they will remain fixed in their particular relationship. Just like when Krishna pulled over the two trees that were the two Arjuna trees, which were Nala Kuber and Manigriva, the two sons of Kuber, who had been cursed by Narad to become trees because they had performed illicit sex in the Ganges with the Apsaras in the Swarga Loka, in the Mandukini Ganga. So therefore they were cursed to become trees. But then they got a blessing that you can be trees in Krishna's garden. So Krishna, when he was tied to the stone mortar, He pulled the stone mortar between the two trees and pulled the two trees down. Out from the trees came the sons of Kuber, offered their obeisances to Krishna, circumambulated Krishna, offered their prayers, begged Krishna for forgiveness, that now they realize the purpose of life. They begged him that we can serve you eternally without being deviated again. And they went back to Kuber. Meanwhile, the huge crash of these gigantic trees falling caused Nanda Maharaj to come running to see whether Krishna was all right. And he saw that here Krishna is there crawling with a stone mortar tied to him, and the two trees are fallen. And he said, "What have you done?" Called Mother Yasoda, "What have you done with, you're putting my son in such a dangerous position. What have you done?" And, "No, I just, to keep him out of trouble, I tied him to the mortar. How did he get over here? I don't understand." Then they asked the other children, "What happened?" So, "Well, Krishna pulled this, you know, gigantic stone mortar, was pulling it, it got stuck in the two trees, he pulled the trees down. Then out came the trees, came these four-handed figures, very effulgent persons with helmets and so many jewels. They circumambulated Krishna, offered prayers to Krishna, and flew up in the sky. Nanda Maharaj heard all this. "Are children, you such imaginations! Where do you come up with all these things? Why can't anyone tell me what really happened?" Anyway, then he untied Krishna and held Krishna to his chest. And "The Lord has protected my son somehow." And scolded Mother Yasoda again, "You take care properly of the child. I go out working in the day and then you let the child go here and there. You don't watch." Even Nanda and Yasoda also had the Vihasta chit-chat all over Krishna, of course. So, they were fixed, they never thought Krishna is God. Until Krishna lifted up Govardhan Hill, then nobody could escape but see that Krishna had superhuman, supernatural power. At that time, all the residents of Vrindavan went to Nanda Maharaj after the Govardhan Leela, and they said, "Look, at all these years, so many things have been happening. We've heard so many things, but you always avoid it. Now we saw with our own eyes Krishna lifted up the entire mountain for 7 days with his little finger of his left hand. Now you want to tell us that Krishna is just an ordinary boy? We won't believe you. You have to tell us, who is Krishna? We want to know." So then Nanda Maharaj said, "Well, Garga Muni, our family priest, he told us by his astrological calculation that actually Krishna had all the power of Narayana. He is all the power of the Supreme Lord." So in this way he explained to them and then they felt satisfied. But Nanda Maharaj, even though he said all these things, he could never himself really understand that Krishna has the power of Narayana. How can you have all the power of Narayana? Only if you are Narayana. That Krishna is the Supreme Narayana, he is the original Lord. So somehow Nanda Maharaj, he would always remain in a parental mood. For a moment he might go out and again. But here we see in this sloka today, Kapila Muni is offering, Kardama Muni is offering prayers to Kapila. But he's offering in awe and reverence. So actually, Kardama, he was not able to enjoy that Vatsalya Rasa. He was not able to enjoy the fourth rasa of parental relationship. For very long. He was more in the mood here of awe and reverence and respect. Maybe for some more time, Devahuti, she was in a motherly mood. But at the end, she also surrendered to Kapila Muni and told him that you have now, my, when her husband took the renounce order, the Vedic system is that women should always be protected. It's different from the Western system where everybody is on their own. Vedic culture is that women are to be respected and to be protected in society. When they're unmarried, the parents protect them, the father, other guardians. When they're married, then the husband is to protect them. And when they're in the, when the husband is old, he can take sannyas, and the older son maintains and protects the mother. In this way, whether by father, by husband, or by elder son, then the mother, the lady, is always protected. And this is the Vedic culture. So Kardama Muni, once he gave a son to Devahuti and the son was grown, then he put the mother, his wife, under the care of Kapila. But Devahuti, she realized that Kapila was the Lord. So this whole section of Bhagavatam is a very deep discussion between Kapila Muni and Devahuti. Devahuti is asking questions and Kapila is giving the answers. So, although Kapila Muni came as a son, but Kardama Muni was not bewildered. He knew that he is the Lord of all the universes. He is in charge of the three modes of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that sambhavami juge juge, that I come from in every yuga. He mentions I come out of atma maya, out of my own internal potency. The Lord is coming not the same way we come. We come in the world because of laws of karma. We are born, we stay some time, we get old, we produce some offsprings, we go through some changes, we get old, and we die, we take rebirth again. So according to the laws of karma, we are given a different body. Maybe one time we are born in heaven, next time we are born in hell. Sometime we are rich, sometime we are poor. Sometime we are brahmana, sometime we are sudra. Sometime we are animal, sometime we are human. According to the stringent laws of material nature, we have to take different births. Sometime we are born in a man's body, sometime we are born in a woman's body. This way we rotate around the universe. So externally we always consider whatever this body we have to be the only reality. Whatever we can see with our senses to be the reality. But human beings have got an advanced intelligence that through the eyes of the scripture they can see beyond the immediate growth manifestation. They can see the causes behind the manifestation. Just like for an uneducated person, they may see that, for a scientist, he'll see things maybe in one way than what we'll see things. Then, or what another person says, oh, here's a wall. Scientist may think, or an engineer may think, this is such and such plaster, and this is an RCC structure. Or a chemist may think, well, this is a gypsum board having a chemical composition of lime and other things. Physicists may consider these are all various states of elements and atomic principle, and you see, think of all the quantum particles moving around inside all the atoms in the wall. Depending whatever vision, one can have a vision and see one thing and see different things. Someone may see a tree and think this is a nice tree, and a botanist may think this is a, you know, you'll know the Latin name and the gender and the whole tree family and everything. So, knowledge gives us a different vision of our reality. So spiritual knowledge gives us the actual in-depth vision of what is a reality. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam are given to us so that we can see what is life. If we just see the superficial aspect, that is only one of the levels of vision. It's not the ultimate understanding. Let's see. For instance, once there was a very great king called Suyajna, the king of Usina kingdom. He was a very great warrior. He had become victorious in many battles. He had expanded his kingdom. He was very good to his citizens. There was a proper legal system. He controlled the ministers so they wouldn't steal from the citizens. There would not be undue taxation. He was a very proper monarch in the old system. But he was being attacked by some enemies. And he went into the battlefield and he fought very courageously. But although he was very determined, although he was a very fierce fighter, he was very brave, he was killed in the battle. But he was never a coward at any moment. In fact, although he was fatally injured, he just bit his lip in determination and fought to the last. And finally the king's body was there on the battlefield dead. So all the other generals and brave warriors, they came and paid respect to the fallen warrior. And they saw his brave features and his determination. When his wife's queens heard that he was killed, they came out in the battlefield and they were crying. Their hair was undone, they broke their ornaments, and they were just hysterical crying. They say, how could this happen? How is providence so cruel? How is the fortune so unfair? Here's a brave king. He was ruling his citizens so nicely. How are they going to survive without such a good ruler? How are they going to tolerate the suffering? And we, his queens, how can we live without him? And they're remembering all his good qualities, his kindness to them, his so many good qualities, and they're saying that how could he leave us like this? We're here all alone. And they surrounded him, and the other relatives wanted to take the body to do the, before the sunset, to burn the body according to Vedic ritual. But the queen surrounded and they were crying and crying, and they won't let anyone go near. So finally the sun is getting close to setting, and even Yamaraj could hear the crying of these queens. So then Yamaraj took the form of a young boy. People like to hear spiritual and philosophical things from young children. It's very attractive. Because normally children don't speak such things. They're normally more frivolous. So if they speak something very philosophical, it's very enchanting to the elderly people. So he came as a young boy. And then there he saw all the queens are crying. And he started to speak out loud. What is this? I thought the older people were more intelligent than this. And I find that they're just like we children. very foolish. How is it that these queens and such intelligent elders are acting so childishly? I am very surprised. I have seen my mother and father, they also have died. My grandfather has died, great-grandfather all died. Everyone in this world is born, and eventually they're going to have to die. So here, but I see these people are lamenting like anything, surprised that death has come. But don't they know that everyone has to die? So why are they making so much of a commotion and not facing the reality? Nature of this world is like that. But then he gave a story. He said, just like there's a story that there was a hunter and he was trying to catch two birds. Cockatoos or something, some kind of bird is there. Forget the name. He was trying to catch the birds, so he would put up nets and traps in the forest. So there was two birds that were very happy, husband and wife bird with many children. And the white bird got caught in the trap of the hunter. And she was calling out. And she was caught like this. So the husband, he was really, the husband bird, he was really frustrated. He said, what happened? How cruel is the laws of nature? Here is my good wife, and I have so many little baby chicks, baby birds. They don't know how to fly yet. Who'll take care of them? Now the mother is caught, and she's such a good wife. How can I live without her? What is the use of flying around if I don't have my wife with me? And so he just stayed there by the wife, lamenting and saying all the things, and what is the use? She's caught by this hunter. What a horrible thing. Why God is so cruel to have this happen? So while he's lamenting, then the hunter is sneaking. He sees, and with his arrow, he shoots the arrow, kills the other bird, kills the husband bird. So both are finished. So Jamaraj is a child, he told all the queens, so you're all sitting here crying. You're lamenting that your husband is gone, but that person that you've known, he is there. The only person you've been able to see your whole life is the body. So body is still there. Same helmet, same face, same arm, same torso, same legs. So you can speak to him while you're all crying. The actual person has gone. That's why you're crying. You never saw the actual person. You're only seeing his shell. Just like somebody says, sees a house, they may say, oh, there is the Prime Minister's house. So they may say, oh, this Prime Minister. Not the Prime Minister, it's his house. When they see the house, they say like that. So you're seeing this body and you're saying, here's the king. You never saw the actual Atma. Now the Atma has gone on. You can sit here crying to all day and night for the rest of your life. They never bring back the Atma. Atma is gone. So instead of wasting your time in this way, you should take necessary steps to save yourselves. To see what is the dangers in life and to actually take precaution. Now allow the final rites to your husband to be done. And you all prepare yourself for the solve these problems in life. Don't make the same mistake like the bird who was shot by the hunter. This lamenting won't solve anything. So in the Vedic culture, actually, lamentation is, of course, everyone will feel sadness at the loss of a near and dear one. But with spiritual knowledge, we know that the person is not dead. person ever finish it. Soul always is living on. So Vedic culture, even after the decease, even after the death of a relative, we do Shraddh, we do Pinda, we do many ceremonies for the departed soul, knowing the soul is living on. But the body is no longer functioning, but the soul is continuing to live. And this body, another body, and some other place. So we take precaution to help the soul. Putra, putri is in Hindi or Sanskrit, are names of the children. Vikapu means help, and tra means to deliver. So the man who can deliver his parents from hell is called putra, a daughter who can deliver his or her parents from hell, a putri. So how we can deliver our parents from hellish condition? So we become properly situated in devotional service. If we are doing yajñas, if we are doing spiritual activities, that benefit will also go to the forefathers. That will go to the children. And after they depart, we can also offer various pujas for the welfare of their soul. So in this way, there's a blessing of the Lord given by having good children. So in Vedic culture, that was the first thing that the parents wanted to train their children to be proper religious children. So that after they die, the children will do all these spiritual rites. Nowadays people are not concerned. They want to see children get PhD, MA, MSc. Then when the parents die, they say, what is all this hogwash? We don't believe in all these things. There's only chemicals there or something. So then they don't do all those rites because they never saw that whether the children are trained in spiritual life. It's alright to have MA, PhD and all these things, but there should also be spiritual education side by side. That's the point. Ishopanishad says side by side, one should know the material world and should know the spiritual world. So that's why Prabhupada, he was saying, in India, we are just imitating the West, but we have to be very careful to preserve our own culture. And we take the good things from the West and preserve the good things of India. In this way, we can have a perfect situation. We shouldn't give up the essential features of our own culture, of the Vedic culture. That will be because it's not that the West has got a perfect system. They got good technology, some good economic formulas, which are also mentioned in the Vedas as far as economic formulas. It's nothing new. But spiritually, they don't have a vision. They don't know where the world is heading. They don't know what the world's situation should be. That's why we're facing so many ecological problems now. They want to have summit because so many imbalances, because they don't know what is the proper way to lead humanity. Where humanity should, what is the ideal situation? The ecological balance is automatically there in the Vedic culture. Anyway, that's another big topic. So here we're discussing about Kapila Muni, Kardama Muni. So Kardama Muni knew that who Kapila was. He was not an ordinary child. We should know that who we are. We are actually the Atma. We're living in a body, whether we someone has a female body or male body, they have to act externally according to the body they have. Actually, they'll identify with that body. But spiritually, they can see beyond that and see they have a higher identity also. That is, they're the servant of the Lord. So whatever situation we're in, we should use our life for pleasing the Lord. That is a specialty of human life. Animals are eating, humans are eating, animals are sleeping, humans are sleeping, animals are creating babies, humans are creating babies, animals are fighting, humans are fighting. That way there's not a big difference. Only humans are doing it in a more complex way. In fact, animals, they are more regulated by nature. For instance, a cow or any animal, they have a certain cycle when they feel some desire for sex. Once in a month, a cow feels for 2 days some sexual agitation. Only at that time will she be calling for the bull. But human beings, they are not so regulated. They are always very lusty. So they have many desires all of the time. It's not by nature's way, animals are automatically regulated. Of course, there are some very lusty animals also, like monkeys and pigeons. They always are having sex. But apart from that, most of the animals, they are very regulated. Even the tigers and lions, they are only having sexual desire at certain times. The human beings, we got so much active senses. We can eat anytime. We saw in Oregon some people, they are eating 5 times, 6 times, 7 times a day. They're always eating. You see in the West, people are very much focused on sex life. This is the main preoccupation that's very visible. So different agitations are there for the senses. And they are pulling the senses all the time. So what is human life meant for? That we have to, since we are not regulated by nature, we have to regulate ourselves by intelligence. So by natural intelligence we bring ourselves, bring the senses under control, and through yoga, through bhakti yoga, we can engage the senses in proper spiritualized activities and regulate them. And this way we can become peaceful. Otherwise you see that why animals look more peaceful sometimes than modern man. But human being is meant to be the supreme peaceful entity, much more than animals. So that is only possible when a human being controls themselves according to spiritual systems given by Krishna. But we become in material life, we become very attached, so we don't want to, we think, oh, I can't let go of anything. If I let go of anything, then maybe I'll suffer. There's a story how once there was a man, he was very tired, he was very hungry, hadn't eaten for a long time, and he came by the side of the Ganges. There was one temple, and he just leaned against the column of the temple. And he was very hungry. And one rich man, he came and he was doing puja in the temple. And he saw, I want to give some charity for feeding some, in the name of the deity, I want to feed some hungry person. And he saw that here's this man and said, here, I want to give you this food. So just, please accept this. So the man said, okay, you give me the food. So he's leaning on the column. And he puts his hand around the two sides of the column and said, you give me the food. The man said, you'd come out from the column and take it. He said, no, I'm too tired. Just put it here. I can't. So the man put a big bunch of puff rice in his hand. Koi, the fused rice. And the man is there. And he is holding the column with the fused rice. And then he's looking. And he wants to eat the fused rice, but he tries to reach it. He can't reach. He wants to let go, but if he lets go, then all the puff rice will fall down. So he's in a real fix. He can't let go, he can't eat. This is a situation in material life. We don't want to be afraid of, if I let go of something, then I'm going to lose out. At the same time, we're also not able to enjoy. We're not fully satisfied. We're not fully getting that happiness that we're hankering for. Same time, whatever we have, we don't want to let go. So neither we can enjoy, neither we can let go. And this way, we are in a real fix. So that's why all the shastras tell us we should cut through this maya and regulate ourselves, engage in devotional service. Everything is possible by the Lord's mercy. Actually, the Jamarachi also gave instruction to those queens that, look at it, if somebody loses something on the street, sometimes he may go back and even after a few hours he finds this thing is still lying there. But if the Lord desires, he can get back even a lost thing, you lose it on the street. But if the Lord, the protection is not there, even you may have a big fortress with treasure house, bank, still people are somehow figuring how to rob the banks. How to steal from the house, the secret place, may not be safe. So without the Lord's mercy, one cannot be secure. We just think, I'll make a very good arrangement and that will protect me. It won't, that's no protection. Death is going to come in due course of time. Dangers may be there. We need, the only way we can cross over these dangers is by the mercy of the Lord. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains, if we take the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, this will cross us over all the dangers of life.
Samasita je padapallava plavam mahat padang punyaya so morari bhavang buddhi vatsa padang 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 yakti padam natesam.
The lotus feet of Krishna. Worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna in his human form of life, they are like the boat to take us over the ocean of birth and death. And this bhavam buddhi, the ocean, we can easily cross over.